Welcome, Directly Speaking, a direct-to-consumer marketers podcast. Our podcast features marketing leaders in the direct-to-consumer and e-commerce space. We get to learn a bit about their brands and the stories behind them, compare notes on trends and challenges in the industry, learn how they approach their marketing journey, and hopefully a little bit about them personally. I'm your host, Marcus Lancaster, head of e-commerce and retail strategy at Quad, and I'm pleased to introduce you to today's guest, Casey Rosette. Casey Rosette is a multifaceted marketing leader passionate about consumer connection and fueling sustainable brand growth. She has more than 15 years of experience delivering measurable impact for iconic global lifestyle brands such as Vans, The North Face, Timberland, Dickies, Wrangler, Lee, New Balance, and Jockey. Her marketing expertise covers a wide range of capabilities, including brand management, media, retail, digital marketing, analytics, and operation, and has taken her around the globe with expat stints in Europe and Asia. Most recently, Casey served as Senior Director of Media and Omnichannel Marketing at Vans, where she oversaw paid media, omni-marketing, visual merchandising for the U.S. and Canada. She is founder of Clever Edge Consulting, a marketing consultancy focused on supporting clients in the spaces of marketing strategy, analytics, and investment optimization to fuel brand growth and commercial impact. Casey, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
I'm a little breathless reading about your bio, but let's start with you telling us a little about yourself. You cover some iconic brands in your history. Just give us a quick, let us know who Casey is to start us off for today.
Sure. Well, good to meet everyone. I have been, have the good fortune of being in the apparel and footwear space for my whole career. One of those people who went to college and really found my passion in brand management and marketing. I went to North Carolina State and College of Textiles, and so had a really great science and data kind of grounding in the space, and then had an opportunity to jump into Jockey right out of school. So I've worked for a bunch of brands in that industry. I have a deep passion there for consumer brands, for marketing and engaging with consumers around tangible products. And I've worked both in a regional and a global capacity. And, you know, as you mentioned, had the opportunity to live abroad as well, which really was one of the highlights of my whole career. For me personally, I live and work in Wilmington, North Carolina. I have two children and a husband, and my happiest place is outside. So anytime I can be in nature, it's really energizing for me. It's where I do some of my best thinking. If you put me around the beach or trees, I'm usually happy.
I love that. Well, you know, when we were talking before, one of the things I really wanted to dive into, which we haven't done on the show before, is some of your expat stints in Europe and Asia. What's different about global and regional marketing, and what's different about working and living abroad?
Yeah, so I think a lot of it has to do with perspective and really, you know, getting closer to specific regions or even markets within a region that have a ton of nuance, a lot of times cultural nuance, that really should and can shape the way that you bring a product to market, the way that you craft messaging to go in front of consumers. When I was at Jockey, I had the opportunity, I was working in brand management as part of the international division, and had the chance to work out of our Chicago headquarters first, and then go to the Asia headquarters. At the time, they were based in Hong Kong. I was there for roughly a year, came back, and then had the opportunity to go to the European headquarters in Germany and lived and worked there for a couple of years. And I really just don't think anything can beat on the ground experience. If you are living and working in the community and the culture, and you are seeing consumers firsthand, it gives you a completely different appreciation for, you know, how to convey the brand, how to really break through in some of those markets. But also it helps build credibility with the teams that you're partnering with. A lot of times, you know, you have, whether it's corporate to stores or global to regional, you have people that are quite distanced from the end work product, or really, you know, what is going in front of the consumer at the end of the day. trying to bridge that gap, get closer to the action, I think is really helpful. And it's a way to break down some of the barriers that often can exist, you know, the healthy or unhealthy tension between global and regional teams. When I was at Jockey, particularly in Asia, what, you know, an interesting kind of anecdote or way that we had to work around in Asia, it's some of the markets, and of course we're marketing underwear and, you know, lifestyle apparel. Some of the markets actually can't or don't allow you to show innerwear in advertising. So that was a very unique challenge that we had to navigate, but we were able to do it through close partnership with our local teams, looking at, you know, what the brand stood for and how do we communicate the value proposition and the breadth of product in maybe a non-traditional way. You know, Pakistan was one market and Indonesia another, where we really had to think differently about messaging, even keywords and, you know, how the brand showed up both in digital and print. So that opened my eyes to, you know, really thinking differently and never approaching it as a one size fits all. I think, you know, you have to find the balance between brand consistency. You need to show up as one brand around the world and really stand for something, but it has to be regionally applicable. In most markets, you just won't win if you can't make that distinction.
That's a fascinating observation. And the question that I was ruminating on while you were sharing that is, I have a couple, but one is, it's probably difficult to thread the needle between regional, the right regional messaging and brand values. How did you do that?
Yeah. So when you think about, you know, I guess the regional breakthrough, if you will, and what's going to land, it really has to start from the brand foundation. And then you look at, you know, two or three layers deeper of how you can tailor that to the market. So, for example, you know, from a content and creative standpoint, that could be making sure that you have relevant and relatable talent in your content. So, you know, there may be a brand campaign, for example, that is created by Global and distributed, you know, across all of your markets. And either that needs to be diverse enough and relevant enough in all of your markets that it can land, or more often than not, you need a derivative version of that that will work in individual markets. It's really hard to create that one size fits all. But if you have the framework of a campaign or of messaging hierarchy that allows for some flexibility, I think typically it will drive more impact. You know, translations and taglines and things like that. I mean, that's certainly something I've navigated in multiple brands. Oftentimes you'll have, you know, a creative tagline or an agency comes with something that feels really punchy, and in English it may work, but if you haven't vetted it and validated across all of your markets or even across consumer segments, you don't know that it's going to land. And that becomes, you know, an early way to break apart what could be a cohesive message. And now you have every market kind of on their own.
I understand. And that comes back to one of the things you said about building credibility with teams, the opportunity to have some interaction between the local teams and the global brand enables you guys to synthesize, enables a brand to synthesize the understanding of the local culture and the brand values in a way that gets you to market most effectively.
Yeah, I do think it's really important to bring in regional stakeholders early. I mean, often you'll have, I've seen it happen before, not of late, but in my past, where you'll have a big global story or campaign or some new product launch, and everything is kind of kept under wraps until the final reveal. And then it's handed to the regions who really, that last mile is the most important, right? If they don't believe in it, if they're not bought in and they haven't had either a preview or an opportunity to give feedback, they're likely not going to embrace it as much as they could, or worse, they're going to either not use it or they're going to modify it to a point where it doesn't feel connected to the original intent. So I think giving people a seat at the table, it doesn't need to be, you know, disproportionately regionally involved, but key marketing leaders, key strategy leaders, or even GMs from your regions need to have early access. And if they're catalyzed around the same mission, then you're going to have the best support and you're really going to show up in a coordinated launch way.
Got it.
Again, whether it's, you know, campaign driven or really the broader go-to-market process, having integration from the beginning and throughout is really important. People want to feel heard and they want to feel like they're a part of the process. In my experience, when they are, you have a lot better results at the end. You don't have, you know, things crashing and burning at the last hour or things showing up in market that don't meet expectation.
Right. Got it. All right. I'm going to circle back to something you said before. I wrote down here, the last mile is the most important. I love that line. Let's shift our conversation, specifically experiential retail and how, you know, merging both physical and digital experiences has become so important for brands. You know, what are some of the learnings that you've drawn in that space?
Yeah, so I know we were chatting about this, but I read, you know, not a brand new book, but one that I think is pretty applicable for a lot of marketers in our space by Will Goddara, called Unreasonable Hospitality. And he's in the restaurant space. It's really, you know, the lessons and experiences he had taking his restaurant, 11 Madison Park, to their first Michelin star. But the focus is all around consumer connection, really going above and beyond expectation. Yeah, and I think, you know, consumer connection and that transcending really like the tangible offer, whether it's, you know, the meal in the case of the book or product in the case of consumer brands. And, you know, the notion that the product has to be great. That's really table stakes at this point. You've gotten somebody in your store, on your site, in a wholesale partner looking at your brand. The product can't be a barrier. The consumer connection is really driven by shared purpose and relevance. So the differentiator there, and, you know, both what he talks about in the book and, you know, what I've seen be effective from a marketing standpoint, comes down to storytelling. How are you creating that emotion? How are you connecting people to your brand, but also something bigger than your brand, a community, shared experience, something that is going to make them feel more than just putting on a pair of shoes or, you know, a backpack, whatever it may be. And that's what helps you to rise above a singular product or seasonal drop. But, you know, keeping that mental space, mind share throughout the year. You know, recently from a van standpoint, we worked on the Fifth Avenue flagship store. And if you haven't been to that store on Fifth Avenue in New York, definitely worth checking out. And we had quite a large team that helped to revamp that store and ensure that it showed up in a way that really well represented the brand. And product presentation, certainly a big part of that, but it was much more than product. Looking at every detail, every space, every touch point in the store, where would, you know, we want consumers to pause, to engage with the brand, and really understand, you know, the heritage, the history, connect with the authentic roots that Vans offers. And so, you know, one of the elements that we designed in the store was called the Community Hub. You see it when you walk right in the door to the right. And it's a manifestation of that intent of creating culture and community. The Community Hub is a space that makes skateboarding more accessible to everyone. It's staffed by local skaters who live and breathe the community they serve. So they know all about the skate parks in the area. They know athletes that are from the area, but they're able to engage with everybody from a complete novice to somebody who, you know, is coming and looking for a specific component. And the result of creating that hub is an experience that feels real and it feels memorable and it goes beyond commerce. Yes, there's plenty of things for sale in the space, but the idea is that it over delivers on the experience and you feel like you've stepped into more of a curated, almost, you know, in a modern museum type space that is going to make you want to talk about that, share that with your, you know, friends and community, and just drive that bigger connection.
Got it. I love that. And you tie to something we've been seeing in a variety of consumer data over the course of the last few years, that people want still experiential physical experiences. Okay, so you've got the physical experiential retail environment. How do you uncover that emotional connection in a digital environment later for those same consumers?
Yeah, so I'll talk about digital for a moment, and then I do want to talk about, you know, more of like the experiential event space as well.
Sure.
That connects the two. So from a digital standpoint, you know, really leaning into immersive experiences by extending your physical touch points. So, you know, retail stores are a learning lab. And if you have the opportunity, you know, in your brand to have a few flagships or, you know, really interesting high volume stores, getting measurement in place to understand how consumers are spending their time in your store, what does dwell time look like in certain areas, and looking at that data to help you understand what's working or what's creating the pause, what's getting people to stop the scroll in a retail store environment, as an example. And also, you know, not in a vacuum, but also talking to your retail store team and getting the commentary, getting the anecdotes from the people that are in the store every day for hours on what they're hearing about. What are consumers surprised to find? What are they, you know, taking the time to speak up about, or where do they have questions? And so learning through those types of observations, I think, can help you understand what may translate to digital, and obviously different environments, but there is a lot that I think can carry over from retail stores, and we don't always think about it in that kind of extended capacity. I think in digital, you know, customer service and experience kind of go hand in hand. So how do you make it easy for consumers to shop? The wayfinding, both in-store and online, super important. And there's so many signals digitally that can help you with that in terms of consumer search or site behavior. But focusing also on what you can provide, again, beyond the commercial exchange. So even for digital, you know, what is going to keep consumers engaged with your brand in that space? So it could be unique content where they can only access it through your site or through a link out. It could be access to either product or information, tickets, whatever it may be, and community as well. And so I think a lot of brands have created that through the social space of an extension of community. And, you know, yes, it can be an opportunity to speak about new product, but being careful that you have the right balance of content so that there's more of a value delivery to the consumer than just the sales pitch. Like they, you know, they want to be learning about culture. They want to be discovering new people or new communities or trends beyond just what they may put in their basket.
I love that because it kind of comes back to your observation about unreasonable hospitality, and that when you do it right, it allows you to have the moment of connection with the consumer that really shares your brand ethos.
Yeah. And I just can't emphasize enough. And I feel like, you know, a lot of people do say it, but you have to get close to your consumer. And so, you know, the front line for brands really with the consumer is oftentimes your retail store teams, maybe your community managers out in the digital space. But the one-on-one engagement is super important too. I think often I've been there and certainly, you know, self-reflected on this, that it doesn't feel like there's enough time to be out in stores, out in markets, in consumer panels, observing and really getting in front of the person you're trying to talk to often. But it is so important when you start to get distanced and you lose that connection. you can become too insular. And so I think that's a really important, you know, element of work that everyone needs to prioritize and create, you know, some structure around it to ensure that that's happening all the way through the line, not just with leadership, not just with, you know, entry level.
I understand.
But I think it's really important.
And I'm sensing as I talk to you a gap in that you mentioned delivering value to those consumers far beyond just selling to them. And I'm getting a sense that maybe that's a gap with lots of brands in the digital relationship with their consumers. Do you feel, you know, where does your mind land on that?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it can be a gap. I think there's a bit of a tipping point almost in, you know, do you want it to be purely a commercial transaction, or do you, on the flip side, start to think of your brand as more than what it is? So yes, you can create culture and community. You have to be careful you don't overposition it, you know, to consumers as something non-commercial, because at the end of the day, you are selling product, you know, in
yes.
the spaces that I'm talking about. And so I do think there's opportunity to look at the value proposition and how you engage consumers and kind of give back to them through things like, you know, dynamic loyalty programs and really understanding what matters to them. What do they care about? You know, is it purely a transactional approach where, you know, you're giving them, you know, effectively a percent back on everything they're purchasing? Or is it more of the curated access, information, connections, you know, covetable, you know, product or signed like one of one items? And I think that's a way to kind of get into that. The other piece that is important, you know, for everything we're saying is, what are those experiences that you can connect to the brand that are going to become memorable and ideally repeatable and ownable? And I'm thinking of something like the Vans Warped Tour, where there's so much equity for the brand and really for the connection to music that, you know, fits there. And now, you know, that's back on this year and to be repeated is my understanding. But even when you look at, you know, both the brand and the commercial benefit, you're creating an on the ground experience that's going to live long after, you know, the weekend is over, and you're creating, you know, social conversation and, you know, a sharing opportunity for people that are on the ground to bring back to their communities. I think now from a digital standpoint, it comes down to how you are extending that reach and access. So whether it's live streaming or, you know, sharing clips and posts and the media amplification so that you can achieve scale. So it's really important to create these experiences, but not to do it in such a vacuum where you can't, you know, give that access, which is the consumer benefit, and gain kind of the reward through the reach and the scale that's important.
I understand. Impact. And also you talk about one-to-one and connections. If you're identifying what is resonating with your audience, then you have to be agile enough to deliver and shift and make sure that your messaging and you know, content reflects what will resonate.
Yeah, and I think that's where, you know, and Vans has done a great job of this, and I think some of the other brands I've worked with before too, of especially from a social standpoint, you need people on the ground. So when you're talking about event, you know, marketing or content creation, definitely you need people that are there in the moment to be, you know, having the conversations, picking up on the trends, observing competitors, taking all of that into account as they're coming up with, you know, a more agile content strategy in real time. But it's important, you know, year round, obviously, as well. And I think that comes back again to community management, both organically and paid, and really not only listening to consumers, but making sure that the people you have engaging with your consumers in those spaces, just like you would want for retail stores, are authentically connected to the brand, are well-trained, are informed and knowledgeable, making sure that you really have kind of brand ambassadors in all those touch points.
All right. Let me throw you a couple more quick hitters at you, if that's okay.
Sure.
This question has been one I've been kicking around with some colleagues lately. If you had to pick one marketing lever that you think is kind of underutilized in the apparel and footwear spaces mm-hmm. these days, what might it be?
Ooh, that's a good one. Can I pick two?
Sure, absolutely.
I have a digital and a traditional.
I love that. That's perfect. I love that.
So I'll say from a digital standpoint, I think a lot of brands are underutilizing Pinterest. And it certainly depends on your demographic and, you know, who you're trying to target. It's not unknown, obviously. And, you know, if you've read any of the recent reports, they're growing in a really healthy way right now. But I think, you know, whether it's them directly or similar offers that create shoppable content that feels, you know, more immersive, that is curated in a different way, that gives, you know, some kind of autonomy to the user and the creator to curate what they're seeing. It feels like that is breaking through with especially Gen Z females and even Alpha behind them in a different way. The ability to kind of shop through that, if you think about back to school and you look at, you know, how people are starting, how younger consumers especially are starting to curate lists, even the wish list idea, and there's plenty of apps that do that too. I think that's an area that, you know, often is funded at a much lower level than the traditional, you know, Meta and TikTok, et cetera. But there's a lot of opportunity there. There's some pretty cool tactics that can be deployed. There's ways that influencers are really taking hold. And I think, you know, it's certainly not new, like I said, but I do think it's underutilized. From a traditional standpoint, you and I talked about this too, but I do think there's merit in print. I mean, we have quite a lot of data in my, you know, full history of my career, showing the efficacy that that can drive. And I think it comes down to, you know, the what, why, and how much of the type of print marketing that you're doing. So, you know, I've seen wild postings be quite effective in local neighborhoods, you know, helping to spread awareness for an event or getting a product launch out there. It can be, you know, very cost efficient and a way to show up, you know, in a bigger way or make a statement. You know, marquee billboards can work as well, but can be pretty cost prohibitive. So sure. That can be a challenge. And, you know, I think things like magazines and physical touch points are almost novel now. And they tend to have some sticking power versus something like an email. So, you know, very brand dependent, very consumer dependent, but having a beautifully curated magazine or something that's even more like a collage style zine or a little less of a traditional catalog, I think there's something to that. And if the dollars make sense or the cost makes sense to, you know, have that printed and mailed, there's a lot of data to support that that can still be effective.
I love that.
It's something that's, you know, been walked away from in a lot of cases.
Yeah, there's a default expectation that direct marketing of any kind has become cost prohibitive, but as CPCs have continued to rise,
right,
suddenly that delta is often surprising to people, especially if the audience is well thought out.
Yeah, totally. It can be quite efficient. And yeah, I mean, if it's not a scattershot approach and you're being thoughtful about who you're reaching, I think it can be a great tactic. And particularly when you think about, you know, high buying time periods or gifting periods like holiday, back to school, or other holidays, I think there's opportunity there. You know, I'm a millennial. And so, you know, from a personal perspective, there are, you know, certain travel magazines or even interior design that they'll hang out in my house or my car much longer than, you know, an email or something else. And so, you know, that becomes something that when you have an idle minute or you're not in front of a computer, it, in my opinion, breaks through to your brain in a very different way. Consumers consume information differently on and offline. So I think, you know, if I could leave one thought on this question, it's think about diversity. Don't go completely in one direction, because there's enough, you know, psychological research to suggest that the way that you kind of sink in or retain recall in a consumer's mind is different based on medium.
How have you seen consumer expectations evolve over the last couple of years? And follow up to that would be, what do you expect to see in terms of how they'll change in the near future?
Yeah, so consumer expectations, I think, you know, speed of anything has become such an ingrained kind of expectation for all consumers. If you think about whether it comes down to new product hitting the market, seasonal trends and changes, time to get product in your hand, and response time, even when you think about social, I think that's probably one of the biggest drivers of everything has an expectation of immediacy. There are, you know, even in apparel and footwear, some brands out there that are embracing more of the, you know, slow movement. You know, you've heard of like slow food movement, things yes. like that, where, you know, not to say they have slow response times, but there's some table setting to explain that, you know, good product takes time to make or it takes time to ship, and here's why. And maybe that's an ecological play or some other benefit. So I do think there's some brands that are bucking the trend on that, but largely, you know, between consumer, like commercial expectation and just social media infiltration, like we have trained everyone to think about, you know, this guarantee of immediacy. So I do think that's a big expectation. And I think there's different ways to approach that from a brand standpoint, again, not all of which need to be commercially rooted. As we think about the future, and I'm sure we're getting served different ads on social, but there's quite a lot coming through around more of an analog approach to whether it's technology or even like the print example we were just talking about, of trying to kind of make a step change of like, how much can this pace continue? And is there a finite capability from a just human standpoint?
Yes.
Or do we start to kind of revert or think about, you know, a modern way to slow down or take a pause and absorb information differently? Like there's enough starting to come up in that space that I feel like, you know, there could be a movement or will be a movement around some of the analog or, you know, slower pace of things around products or
yes.
interaction with information. And I do think it's also quality of life. And I think that there's, you know, consumers in that generation that are prioritizing that differently than we've been doing the last few years.
Fascinating. And I think it'll be interesting to see how people can capitalize on that inherent desire to sort of disconnect. I just got back from a backpacking trip. You mentioned the trees and the beach being things that refresh you. Just got back from a backpacking trip in the North Cascades where I was completely disconnected for 3 days. And it's just amazing how it just resets your mind.
It completely does. I mean, there's so much around like how that affects your wiring. I mean, it's always advice I've been given of, you know, if you need to slow your brain or you need a second to think, like deep breathing, walking outside, getting sunshine, putting your feet in the grass, like it physiologically changes you.
I have one more question for you. If you were looking back 15 years ago at Casey as she was entering the marketing world out of NC State and going to work for Jockey. What is one lesson that you wish you could teach yourself going back that would have improved your career experience?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say the one, you know, lesson that I feel like I took or acted on that I wouldn't change is that I went after opportunities, and I always kind of gauged, you know, did the timing, did the location, did the opportunity or what I could learn feel right? And if it wasn't a strong no, it was a hell yes. And, you know, that's what kind of opened the door to opportunities like living abroad and to working with some of the great brands I've had the fortune to work with. I think, you know, from a lesson of what would I change, I would say, you know, prioritizing, you know, work-life balance to some degree, but more than that is taking time to get in front of the consumer, get out in the market, and prioritize education in the industry. I think that's often an afterthought where it's tough to make.
That's a good point.
Because everyone's busy and you're doing more with less. But it's so important because you can't just be within your team or within your brand. You need to know what good looks like and you need to know what's coming. So I think prioritizing education throughout your career is really important.
I love that. That's a great thing to end on. Casey, I want to say, first of all, thank you. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. I just loved getting to know you better. And this has been just a great conversation.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And yeah, hope we have the opportunity to partner together again.
I'd love to. If somebody wants to get to hold of you, what's a good way to do it?
Yeah, so you can contact me on LinkedIn. That's probably the easiest way. I check that and I'm fairly active there. I'm in the social universe, but I have some, you know, privacy blockers up. So LinkedIn at Casey Rosette is the best way to get a hold of me.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Casey. And thank you, audience, for joining us on Directly Speaking today. We really hope you enjoyed the content and getting to know Casey along with us. Hope to have you join us again soon. Take care, everybody.